Hello everyone, the webinar has started. Sorry we're a minute late. Hopefully people are filtering in right now. Contrary to the belief of anyone who thought that we were rerunning last week's webinar, this week, in fact, we're talking about something completely different, aren't we, Verity?
We are.
We are talking about...
We are. We're talking about performance management.
And it is, yeah, thank you for the jazz hands, because it is Employment Law 101. And I also have just been practicing whistling a tune, which is very relevant to performance management. So I'm going to see if I can give it a go now. Ready? Now, any of you who can't recognise my fantastic whistling skills, that's the theme tune to a film called The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. And Verity, I think it was you that coined that phrase in respect of performance management.
I did. You said, what are you going to talk about, Verity? And I said, the good, the bad and the ugly. And I think, let's kick off and talk about the good, bad and the ugly.
I mean, I think that sums it up in terms of performance management, doesn't it? And I probably want to start, if it's all right with you, by talking about some of the bad and the ugly rather than the good. Mm. So I'm going to ask you a question. How many times do you reckon in your legal career? How long have you been a lawyer now?
About 12 years.
12 years, okay. So I've been a lawyer for nearly 20 years. How many times do you reckon in your legal career you've had a client get in touch with you and say, right, we've got this person and we want to exit them for performance? And then you say, okay, cool. So what performance management have you done? What conversations have you had? And they say, oh, we haven't really. And then you say, okay, cool, let's take it back a little bit. What was their last performance rating? Oh, yeah, they were good. Right. How many times do you reckon you've had that conversation, Verity, over the years?
I thought you were going to ask me a different question, which I'll say to you afterwards. But that answer to that question would be on a regular basis, probably monthly. I had one the other day. I thought you were going to ask me, when have I ever had a client who has successfully, or I'm aware of, successfully put someone through performance management? So come to me and then it's turned around and they've stayed. That has never happened. But yes, no, it is always the bad. And it on that scenario, it's often the case as well where you say, have you done any performance ratings? And the answer is often no.
Yeah.
We haven't had any conversations with them, but we've had problems for nearly 18 months and we haven't had any discussions with them, formally or informally. And so you're starting from scratch.
I don't know what's worse, really. I'm not sure that they're, I think maybe they're just equally bad or ugly. Because either way, if you've given someone a good performance rating at their last appraisal, then that's a problem in terms of moving straight into an exit, certainly, mm-hmm. because once someone's got over 2 years service, or rather 103 weeks, I should say, obviously they're entitled to protection from unfair dismissal, and you can exit someone for capability, as we all know, mm-hmm. but you have to have done a proper process to do that.
Yeah.
And if the first that someone's heard of their poor performance and that you want to exit them is 6 months after a good performance rating, you take them into a room and say, oh, you're not very good, we're going to sack you, you are going to lose an unfair dismissal claim. I mean, I could guarantee that 100%. And in your scenario, I'm not sure it's very much better, is it, really?
No, because I always feel like, for me, performance management, I think the main issue for me here is starting right at the beginning, before you even get to the stage of having a performance issue. And it comes back to what Peter, Adrienne and I were discussing last week when we were talking about probationary period, which I think flows on really nicely to this. To me, it's about effective management. And I think managers need to invest the time to nurture their team, to really take the time to get to know their team members, to put, you know, understand their strengths and their weaknesses, because later on down the line, a performance management process, whether or not you're going to exit someone, which we'll talk about later on, circumventing the process, or you're actually going to performance manage, takes a lot of time and resource that people just don't have at the moment. And I think really starting from the beginning and getting your managers very well equipped to managing their staff so that they're very aware of when somebody is not performing. And I think the first port of call is always for somebody to say, well, someone's not doing their job properly. But the question always to me is, why are they not doing it? Is something going on? And I think if you're close to your staff, you should know that perhaps something's going on personally that might be impacting their performance. And that is something that you really need to be aware of, because of obviously the red flag issues that we talk about all the time, discrimination, perhaps they're caring for an unwell relative, or one of their children is ill, or perhaps they are suffering from sort of some depression or anxiety, which is not uncommon in the situation we're in now. And I think if you can pinpoint that and support them, you're going to avoid getting into the situation where you need to performance manage them. There might be some situations where they're not doing their job effectively, and they're not, you know, perhaps they're sitting on their laurels, or they're becoming a bit comfortable, or perhaps they're not moving with the times of the business. A lot of businesses nowadays are leaning out, and so they need their staff to be on the ball. So for me, I feel like it starts right at the beginning. And if you can do that, you're going to definitely minimize getting yourself stuck in a really sticky situation, or even having to performance manage anyway.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I, as many people on here will know, because I used to work with them if they're my clients, but I'd spent almost 9 years of my career working inside corporates as a lawyer. And one of the things that the corporates I worked with did really well, at least so far as the legal team is concerned, I'm not sure it was necessarily the case across the board, was to have what used to be, and I'm sure some of our HR clients will recognize this phraseology, quality conversations with people. And what that meant in terms of me, both as someone being managed and as a manager, was it shouldn't, a performance appraisal. So even before we get into performance management and a problem, the outcome of a performance appraisal should not be a shock to anyone. Because what you should be doing is, whenever you interact in, you know, like a one-to-one, for example, if you have a weekly or a monthly one-to-one with your team, as individuals, you should be giving them that feedback. Feedback is not something that should be reserved for appraisals or for a performance management process. And that's where people start to get into difficulties, I think. Mm-hmm. If you're having those quality conversations all the time, as you've mm-hmm. said, you can pick up on anything that might be impacting someone and give them maybe some support with that. But also, if there isn't any reason and actually they are just genuinely not doing very well at their job, none of this comes as a surprise, you know? And I think it is possible to support someone with performance management and have them continue in employment. I've only seen it happen once in my career. So, but in part, that's because that situation was one that where there had been quality feedback, and you know, the individual wasn't surprised when it came to having some structured support put into place, and they really wanted to succeed, and they did succeed. But that just doesn't happen very often, unfortunately.
No, and I think, you know, you pick on a really important point there, that, you know, it is about management, like we discussed, but also it's about having very good performance appraisal process in place. And a lot of people don't have that. And I'm not talking about something that's an annual appraisal. That is brilliant. But I'm talking about regular one-to-ones, monthly, weekly. So you're really on top of where this person is. So then you start to see the cracks. So I think moving on to actually how you do it and a good process for me would be having those informal chats. Now, we've got a question here from somebody who's talking about if you've got someone on an informal capability process, do you then review it after each stage and give them a formal after each stage? The way in which I would run a process would be to have those informal discussions with that person to begin with, so that, like Sarah said, there is no surprise here. You're saying to them, is everything okay? You know, I've got these concerns. You're not formalizing anything at that stage. And I would probably give it a few weeks for informal discussions with somebody. And if you're not seeing an improvement after a couple of weeks, then I would be saying to them, look, I've got no choice here now. We're going to have to progress this onto formal, and then you would go on to a formal, and then each stage of that process would be a formal process. Realistically, I mean, I'd be interesting to know from the people on here what their process looks like and how many warnings you have, but you tend to have about two or three before you then dismiss. You can call them what you want, their disciplinary warnings or improvement notices, but basically, if you're not improving at each stage, you then get a disciplinary warning. You can appeal the individual can appeal that warning, and it is a formal disciplinary on their file, and then you move to the next stage. And after two or three stages, depending on what your process is like, you will then be, the final would be dismissal. And what I would say is that you must make sure that that person is aware that dismissal is an ultimate goal, potential, not goal, that's probably the totally wrong thing to say.
Outcome.
An outcome for that individual, because what you don't want them to think is that you're just going to be giving them warnings. You want them to know that there is a potential here, because then they'll understand the severity of it. So that is how a really high level of a process looks like. But cutting it down to actually what you do on a monthly basis, or however often you meet them, I would do it no less than a month. I would definitely be meeting them monthly, and if not, every 2 weeks. But in terms of the goals, and they used to call them SMART objectives, didn't they, Sarah? I think it really depends on the client, and I've had this conversation so many times. I really think it depends on the person, the role, what your concerns are with them, because it could be that actually you're talking about behavioural issues here rather than being, work-related capabilities. So I think it really depends, and I think you're just going to have to use a bespoke system. But ultimately, it's got to be something they can achieve. Don't give them unrealistic targets, which is what I see quite frequently being the downfall.
I think the other thing I see as well, I see unrealistic targets, but I also see really woolly targets as well. And I think there is a point right from the informal stage. So to the point of the person who raised the question, and thank you for that, you don't want to be in a situation where you're effectively just rerunning the same meeting. But even at the informal stage, my suggestion would be that you have anywhere between 3 and 5 points that you just say, look, we've got to get sharper on this, and this is how I'd expect you to do that, and this is what I'd expect the output to be. So you're already getting into that structure, that PIP structure of those quite specific points, because it's absolutely useless, as Verity said, giving someone targets that they've got no hope of hitting, and nor would any other reasonable person. Equally, you know, I've never seen anything quite this bad, although close, you know, do better. That doesn't help anyone. It's kind of right, okay, so I've noticed that after meetings you don't follow up so quickly as some of the other team members on your objectives, so what I'd like you to do is focus on what your objectives are out of that particular meeting. I'd then like you to make a note of those, and I'd like you to diarize when you're going to follow up. So you're just giving people the fact that people are not performing means that they need help. And so ultimately a PIP is a tool for two things. It's possibly a tool to manage someone out of business, but actually a tribunal is not going to enjoy reading a PIP that reads like something that's managing someone's business. What it's going to want to see is something that is intended as a support tool, a very clear, precise support tool. Because when you're in that stage where you're not performing well, you don't necessarily have the capability to make those decisions in the first place. So I think you really need that clear guidance.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, it's got to be something that is very specific to that person, that they know they have to achieve with do X, Y, and Z. And if they don't achieve it with the additional support you're giving it, then you know that it's not working. And so then it becomes very clear. Now, Lisa's asked another question about informal process. I think I'm a bit unclear what you're trying to ask here, but I think I'll answer it and let's see what you say. So I think when you're moving on, like I said, you have an informal process before a formal process. When you move to a formal process, there's no informal process in that. It's all formal. Everything is about meeting targets. If you don't meet them, you get a disciplinary. There's nothing informal about that stage. So I'm not sure if I've got the right understanding of the language you're using, but no informal stage should be during the formal process.
We've had a great suggestion here actually from Rachel, who, as she knows, is one of my favourites. She mentions having a PIP buddy as an objective sounding board for the person who is being subject to the PIP to make sense of what's being asked of them. So, and I think that's a great idea. I've not actually heard of that before, but I think it's a really excellent idea, because it gives, there'll be some trust issues if someone's on a PIP, right? Not previously necessarily, but it will create trust issues, because that person's going to feel very exposed and like they've got a target on their back. So they're not going to necessarily want to go back to their manager to say, well, actually, what about this? And I don't understand, you know, because that almost compounds the problem. Whereas actually they've got a neutral third party that they can go, look, I think this is what this means. Can you just help me understand it better? I think that's a really good idea. And I also think that will be, you know, again, something that would be, I'm sorry to look at this like far down the line at litigation, but I am a litigator by background. That would be something that a tribunal will look at with approving eyes, you know, because it's showing that you really have tried to help this person.
I like that idea. I think that's really, I think that's a really actually supportive organisation approach.
Well done, Rachel.
So Danielle said, is Lisa's question about how to move from informal to formal? Okay, so if you're going to move from informal to formal, like I said, I'd be having about a month or a couple of weeks of conversations with that person on an informal basis about their performance, about what's everything going. That's your investigation stage. Use that before you get to any formal process where you're asking, you're digging, is there anything going on, you know, understanding any red flags, or is it just simply that they're just either not able to do that part of their job, or they're struggling, or they need training. And then if anything you implement during that process isn't working, then you have another discussion with them to say, look, unfortunately, it's not improving. We're going to have to move on. And then you write them a formal letter inviting them to a formal process where you then set out their objectives. And that's your first meeting with them. There'll be no outcome of that meeting, so there's not going to be a disciplinary warning, but that's when you set the first goal. So that's probably like day one of your formal process. And then you will have further meetings in between to talk about the objectives, but then you'll have a first formal warning if there's no improvement, probably after a month. So that's our suggestion in terms of how to do it correctly. If I'm honest with you, the majority of time when I speak to clients, and you know, Sarah, you'll probably vouch for this, the conversation goes along the lines of, I've got somebody who's underperforming, we haven't really had a discussion about it, but they need to go, and they need to go now. And so often, you know, the discussion is that you are going to be exiting them out of the business, and that is along the lines of a settlement agreement. And the way in which you would place that to somebody is on the long lines of, it's not working out for X and Y reasons, and if we continue on this process, you're going to be going through a PIP. The thought of a PIP for anybody, whether it's a manager or an individual themselves, is daunting, and nobody wants to be dismissed for performance related issues. So more often than not, they will take that process and that option. But I think, you know, Sarah and I, we had a quick chat about this earlier. The main issue there, isn't it, Sarah, is when you do get somebody who unfortunately doesn't take it, you have to have an open position.
You've got to have a fallback. Yeah. And we always talk about this, don't we, in terms of open and without prejudice positions. So when I'm talking to my clients about this, and Verity's exactly the same, we all are at MPM, the very clear message is, look, you are going to hamstring yourselves if you don't have a fallback position. So I know that the business doesn't want this person anymore. I know that they're putting pressure on you to get them out quickly. But you've got to have something to fall back on. And I think, you know, my view of employment law is very pragmatic. and it's look, you can do almost anything in employment law. It might not be lawful, but you can do almost anything if you're prepared to pay for it, right? So, you know, if you want to get someone out quickly for performance, but you haven't had any discussions with them at all, be prepared for the fact that you're probably not going to just be able to dismiss them on notice. I have clients who ask me to do that, and it's a really frustrating conversation, because actually, you know, anyone who has over 103 week service and the protection from unfair dismissal, and who is able to Google, can my employer dismiss me for performance without process, is going to know very quickly that they could probably sit for between 3 and 6 months being performance managed before they leave with notice. So I think there's an element of, look, be real about that. And then the other thing is, as Verity said, and I rudely jumped in because I feel quite passionately about this point, is please have a fallback position. So when you're having that conversation, manage the business's expectations that you might actually have to do the PIP, because you have to, if you want to have the best possible leverage, you have to go into that without prejudice conversation with a fallback position that you would be prepared to do the PIP. I know, Verity knows, you know, the business knows that nobody wants to do that. you know, in these situations, because it is, it can be a time consuming process. It's frustrating because you're managing the person who's not performing, and that's impacting the business as well as the lack of performance. But just give yourselves that protection, because what you don't want is to have to go into a without prejudice conversation. And you can try, so it won't be truly without prejudice in the common law sense, because you have to have a dispute between the parties, but you might be able to get it in under section 111A of the Employment Rights Act, which is the thing that the coalition government brought in, where you can have a grown-up conversation with someone. That only works, however, if there's no taint of discrimination. So there's still a risk to that, because someone could say, well, you're only doing this to me because I am insert protected characteristic. So you've got to go into it knowing that that without prejudice conversation could appear before a tribunal at some point. And if that's the case, it's got to go to be at your most at the strongest position you can be. You've got to be able to position that as an alternative, and you've got to have, you know, a good clear set of bullet points that you run through that says, look, this is one route we could take. We can do a PIP. If you want to do that, we'll commit to it. We're a bit concerned about whether or not you'll succeed based on what we've seen at the moment, but do you know what? It's an option. However, there's also this other option, because at least then if you do end up in tribunal, you can say hand on heart, look, we haven't made any final decisions. We just recognise that there was an issue here and it might not have been a great fit for the company anymore, or whatever it was. And so we wanted to put options to them. And that is a so much better position to defend than just, oh, we're going to have with that prejudice conversation with you. You're not really good at your job. See you later. I'm going to pause for breath now.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I think, to be honest with you, that if I was going to give any golden nuggets, those that in 20 minutes, that's really what I would say. I mean, I'll leave it on the fact that I go back to the first thing that I talked about, which was management training. I would absolutely train your managers on one, how to effectively manage their team. And that encompasses what we discussed last week, which was about probationary periods. And for those who have more than 2 years service, trying to effectively manage them on a day-to-day basis through your performance development plans, not PIPs, your PDRs and your one-to-ones, and then also managing training them on PIPs, because I think a lot of managers and HR are a bit apprehensive about PIPs. You know, they don't know where to start. And I think ensuring that they're informed, it's always better to be trained. And once you know what you're doing, you're not as scared. And leaving it on a positive point, Elaine Lake has said that when they discussed a PIP with an individual member of staff, they were actually grateful. And I think that's really interesting, because it goes to show that sometimes people just need the support, and hopefully that's a case where they'll be able to turn it round. So let's see.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm going to do a bit of a plug, actually. Can I do a bit of a plug? Yeah.
A bit of a plug.
I think we haven't firmed up the date, but I definitely think at the beginning of February, instead of having one of our Employment Law 101s, we're going to do an actual webinar. So it's going to be an hour long webinar, and it's going to be about those uncomfortable discussions, women issues. We're going to be covering a lot of personal issues that members of both me, Sarah and Adrienne have been through. And we're going to have a couple of guest speakers to talk about menopause, pregnancy loss, you know, periods and work, things like that. So, yeah.
So and actually, I think we're calling it not just women's issues, aren't we, Verity? Because they're not just women's issues.
No, and I think even if you're a male, and a manager, I think it's really important for you to come on and be aware and have an understanding of where you can get the best out of your team by being aware of these issues. They're definitely things that are coming on the radar, and there's more awareness in a positive way about them. So we're going to be talking about them. So please sign up for that. So that will be in a couple of weeks' time. And we look forward to seeing you. Thanks for joining us all today.
And just to finish off, because I realised that I didn't do any of this stuff at the beginning, Lisa has asked whether we're able to access last week's webinar online. So you can access all of our Employment Law 101s either in the news and events page on our website, apart from the D&I one, because that's on my special MPM included page. And for those of you that don't know already, we also now have an arm of the firm that supports with D&I issues that I head up, because it's my absolute passion. So check that out. We're also on Spotify, which is just so exciting for someone like me. I think my kids don't think it's as cool as perhaps I thought it was, but there we go. But we are MPM Legal and MPM included. We're a boutique law firm, and we give you lots of pragmatic, down-to-earth, commercial employment law advice. So if you need support, come and get in touch with us and tell your friends about us, because we're here.
Lovely. Right. Have a good rest of the day, everybody. The sun's shining and I need to crack on.
Brilliant. Thanks, guys. Yay. Brilliant day. Bye-bye.